Welcome to a new episode of the Saltwater Euphoria Podcast. This is your go-to sport fishing podcast, where we will cover all things from fishing, boats, tackle, and anything else saltwater related.
Well done, gentlemen.
Every day is an adventure on the water. We'll be sharing our experiences, stories, tips, and passion for fishing.
Gonna need a bigger boat.
Oh, think bigger, my friend. Think bigger.
Here is your host, Captain Ricky Wheeler.
And here we are, episode 38 of the Saltwater Euphoria Podcast. As always, thanks for listening. If you're new to the podcast, thanks for checking us out. I hope you enjoy this episode. I know I really did. I have a really great guest today, but before we get into that, I am still in the Dominican Republic on Euphoria and just came off a really great weekend of fishing and starting to heat up here. Saturday, we had a nice blue marlin. It was about 350. Awesome bait and switch onto the Fishtown Sea Chugger. So that was really cool. And released three whites. And then the next day, Sunday, we went 7 for 9 on white marlin. So it was, really fun fishing, good action. And, I had great group of guys that are willing to put the time in, and usually you put some time in, you're gonna get some bites. I mean, on Sunday it was a great day, but we did have like a 4-hour lull where we didn't have a single bite, but stuck with it and ended up getting 5 bites late in the afternoon and really made it count. So whole lot of fun, really, really awesome fishing, and it's why I came here. So looking forward to the remainder of this month, and come early May we will be headed to the Bahamas, make our way through there and be home in time for the June tuna season. So I'm looking forward to all that is to come. But on today's podcast, I have a gentleman who has spent a very good amount of time here fishing out of the Dominican Republic and can really shine some light on what the fishery is here and what it has been and what it has become. So he is the mate of the Black Gold and is no stranger to stringing up a lot of flags on his rigger, catching blue marlin, white marlin, sailfish here at a Cap Cana and sometimes Casa de Campo. And he's from Venezuela, so he also has a little insight on what's going on there in Venezuela. And we talk about all the other places he's been. Really, really great stories. I'd like to introduce to you Jose Devere. Well, I'm sitting here with my friend Jose. We are in Cap Cana DR, and he is, for those of you who don't know, he is the mate and has been for quite some time on the 65-foot American custom yacht, Black Gold, that basically lives here in the Dominican Republic. And let's just jump right into it. Let's talk about Dominican Republic fishing, because you've spent, how long have you been a mate on the Black Gold now?
7 years.
7 years? So, and when did you start coming to Dominican
Republic? I started coming to Dominican Republic, we'll say it was 2015, 16, if I'm not wrong. I came here to fish like a 2 month, this time of year, white marlin season.
Uh-huh.
Came to fish 2 months with a Puerto Rican guy, and then, met a lot of great people. Met by then my actual captain now, Keith, on the Black Gold. We were sharing docks back then. It's like a great place, man, here to be. It's like what we expect. You know, if nothing been going on in Venezuela with the politic and all that shit, everything been going on down there. Well, here we are, Dominican Republic, living the dream, boy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you guys consistently put up numbers and have shown many people and also, what Black Gold has done being here for a while, it seems like it's brought a lot of people to come to know what Cap Cana and even Casa de Campo have to offer. But let's talk about the difference, because I get asked by a lot of people, and I can't really chime in because I've never been to Casa de Campo. I just know a lot of people that have, so I know the stories. But what is the difference between Cap Cana and Casa de Campo, between not just the fishing, but also just the atmosphere? What's the difference?
Atmosphere is... I would say here is more like Cap Cana is being more like being your place or whatever you want to call it. Like, you feel here, you can park the golf cart right behind your boat.
Yeah.
You can bring all your stuff right here. You can have all your cleaning table, all your dog boxes and all this stuff. Casa de Campo being getting more like, it was that's a compound built, I would say, if I'm not wrong, more than 50 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it being there forever. The dogs, I'm not going to say they're that old. I don't know about story, all that stuff. But the whole history about Casa de Campo, but they've been there a while. And I will say right now, like 80% of those slips from Casa de Campo, they are private, and the owners just got beach boats.
Okay. So it's not really fishing community the same as it is here.
It's not like here, like, you know, you don't see boats all year round. Over there, the boats show up, like, I would say January to April or something. Uh-huh. You know, whatever, you show up there from U.S.
And that's for the Blue Marlin fad fishing down there.
Blue Marlin fad fishing, yes.
How far are they running?
You can start fishing what they call over there the home base. It's like 16 to 20 miles. Up front of the marina, but lately some people been exploring really far. That's where they used to fish before from Boca Chica. It's like,
okay,
and it's, I would say it's points between 50 and 70 miles.
Oh wow! All right, so going
to the west, you know. Right. So if it's really rough, you can have a good ride going out, but it's a pain in the ass coming back in the afternoon. We fish a lot to the east over there. You're like, you know, 25, 30 miles normal.
Okay.
Pretty decent fishing. We had a couple great years over there.
Hey, you guys just came back from there last week, right?
Yeah.
Went down there.
Yeah.
How was it for you this round?
Well, first day we caught three fish. That's it. First day.
All
right. Second day, we caught a blue and a white. That's it. We didn't mark nothing that day.
Oh, no, wow.
Other than that blue. That why you show up. And then the third day, we never had a bite. And then we were about to start fishing the fourth day. We had a steering problem, so
okay,
we came back here to fix it. This is home base for us, so we got everything here.
Right, right.
We got a condo here loaded, you know, with freezers, boat parts, you know.
Well,
you name it.
Casa de Campo used to have a better winter blue marlin fishery in years past than recently. Any reason? Like, what's the theory behind
that? Man, I don't know if everything moved a little, you know.
Yeah.
The seasons just move a little through the years. Used to be really good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A lot of people used to go there.
Fish don't travel through there no more because we're fishing down there and we were marking tons of bait.
Okay.
Marking bait, like,
really?
Thick, yeah. Bait. Yeah, like what you need.
Right.
That kind of bait that you need. You know, sonar, butter machine, everything.
So it's not a lack of bait.
It's not like bait's missing. It's like the fish wasn't going through there, you know?
Okay. You know, I guess this is the second or third year it's kind of been slower.
It can be like, yeah. And now, you know, today and age, you know, with the sonar, you know when something is there or no.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
You can chase around if you see something, blah, 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 but... Man, it's weird. I don't know if the fish just is not going through there no more
right.
Or changing, you know. Some fish are going through there. You know, we left and then a couple boats been fishing last week and they've been catching two, three, you know, having a handful of bites, but...
Right, right. Good enough to go.
Yeah,
good enough to go.
Yes, yeah. But 3-4 years ago, it was way better, for sure.
Everybody gets so caught up in those double-digit numbers, like it happens every day, and it's not the case. I mean... Shoot, look what happened yesterday. Salty Fair with a quad slam. You know, congrats, yeah. Salty Fair, by the way. But
congratulations.
Like, it's just
awesome.
pretty insane. Like, the special days do happen, but those boys put their time in. And
I fish with them, and they put some time. They fish sun to sun. Watson say, hey, man, like, how much longer we got till, you know, we can make it to the dock at daylight? Say, well, we got to fish, like, we should have left, like, 10 minutes ago. Well, so, okay, fuck it, just fish 20 more minutes, you know. If you're already there, okay, let it go.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, you know, coming back here, man, it's like, you know, it's crazy how everything changed here.
Well, what's the season in your eyes now for Cap Cana? Let's start with the blue marlin season, the fad fishing to the north, and the cow fads.
Like Macau fads.
That really, like, July through January?
We usually start going to the fads end of June, July.
Okay.
All the way, if the weather lets you go, January, because it's always really rough. Big swell and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, this year we fish February in the fads.
Yeah, you guys had some good days.
We fish all year, you know, we fish from all year round from, we'll say... Early July, all the way down to February, following year, you know, fishing the fads. This last year, 2023, you know, a lot of people, like the Wahine, Real Tide, and Southeron, and Pagano and the Goose, they were putting a lot of time, what we call fat season, fishing out front here, blue marlins.
You know, like out on the bank?
Out in the rocks.
Okay, oh, like in the rocks.
The deep area, between two or three rocks, but in the deep area, you know, chasing them with a sonar. They were, you know, getting real good days.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like real good days.
Okay.
Like, you know, you don't used to, talking again about sonar, you can see more stuff now with the sonar than before.
Right. Yeah, it opens up a whole new playbook, basically.
Yeah. So, you know, they were getting on top of the rocks and this, that, getting a blue marlin, a sailfish, or getting chopped by kudas. And then they start chasing something in the deep area. It was a blue marlin, boom.
All right.
But I would say, I think one of those bull one day got 7 or 8 out here on the rocks.
That's awesome.
In the rocks. Yeah, that was September, something like that. Like,
okay. Before what used made to be them like, go there? Just because it was so slow on the fads?
It was slow
time?
In the fads. And, you know, they nobody never stopped fishing up front.
Right.
Like, if 5 bull were fishing a weekend, 4 were going to the fad and 1 was staying out here. And, you know, they were getting bites.
Wow, all right.
That, like that tournament, that cup kind of tournament that you should do the first day, they do a Bimini Star.
Uh-huh.
And it was like super weird because you always see everyone running straight to the airport, to the corner.
Yeah.
And you see a handful of boats just turn the opposite direction, going straight east. Like, what? Well, you know, they had some bites. You know, it's good. But you know, everything changed. And I will say our schedule is like fish, like I say, June, July, all the way to January, February, whatever. Weather let us do. Then March we usually fish Casa de Campo, and then April or late March start already fishing here white marlins out front.
Okay.
All the way to June.
Like March through June. Basically,
March through June. Yeah.
On the rocks out front.
Yeah. The people that wanna come here and get, you know, pretty good fish and all that come April, May.
Yeah.
That's a peak. Should be like right on the peak.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. We've had a consistent 2 to 4 bite days here in March, so I'm looking forward to seeing it ramp up from what I know it can be from being here in April and May.
Yeah, but it will get better. It will get better.
Yeah, no doubt. But again, like 2 to 4 bite, catching 2 or 4 day still isn't bad. So,
no.
Like I said, a lot of people get caught up on insane numbers and forget that it doesn't happen every day. But what's your usual spread when you guys are fishing the fads or fishing for blue marlin? Like, what
fishing
do you guys
the blue
pull?
Marlins, I pull two riggers, two bridge teasers, squid chains.
Okay.
With express, a mackerel mullet.
Right.
Two flat lines, two dredges, and two pitch baits in the boat.
You have any, what are the pitch baits usually?
Where is?
Yeah, what are you using?
I use a mackerel and I use a horse volley in the other side.
All right, and I'm guessing all chugger heads.
Every
base chugger
head. All heads.
Any colors in particular you like for squid chains and dredges, or just...
Squid chains, I usually use a pink and a green.
Uh huh.
Dredges, everything is dark.
Yeah.
Really, mud flaps.
Silhouette.
Yeah. I just fish all those 3D mud flaps and rubber mackerels.
Okay.
That's what my dredges got.
Gotcha.
No, it don't make a lot. For me, it don't make a lot of difference, the color in the dredge.
Yeah, gotcha.
Don't put me a squid dredge. No, no.
Not a fan of those.
No fan. Yeah, gotcha. But that's a...
Basically, same spray white marlin fishing, just all...
Just
all
make everything lighter.
Yeah.
I don't pull, you know, like I was saying, I...
Fishing all 30 pound all year long, right?
I fish 30 pound all year long, blue marlin season, fluorocarbon 80, 9-0 mustard.
All right.
And using easy bait rigging swivels.
Right, okay.
Keep it simple. Mackerels with swivel too. What else?
What's the biggest blue you've caught here? Everybody talks about like DR as all small blue marlins, which is pretty true. I mean.
But during the summer, like July, beginning of August, when you're fishing the fads, you know, that's our time when we've been seeing a little bit more big fish.
Okay.
I will say we caught here handful of fish between 350 and 500 pound, it will be.
Okay.
Like, you know, it's in 7 years. Not like you're going to get one every time you go.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, you get a nice one.
Uh-huh.
During that time of year, most of the time, like September, October, everything started getting smaller.
Yeah, I got
a lot of fish, but small.
Okay. Mixed, a lot of action.
Yeah, mixed bag. You know, you can get one size selfish, the other side you can be a blue one or something. Mm-hmm. Last year we had a blue one. We caught a blue one early in the morning. We set everything back out. It was a squeech, white marlin on the squeech chain. He came all the way in. We hooked the white marlin and we won a rigger. It was three selfish swimming right behind the bait. But they were, man, like, I would say, like, you know, not even 2 foot long.
Oh, yeah, like, little babies, yeah.
Little babies.
So, we would get those in Cal Bahamas, too. It's like, oh, hard boy. To hook them.
Yeah, oh, no, I drop down a bit. I just let it sink and all that stuff. And say, well, wish me luck. This as soon as he jumped, it went like the bait to one side and the selfish to the other one.
Yeah, I believe it. How about meat fish here? Because a lot of people ask, oh, what can we catch to eat? It seems like there's not a lot of bycatch other than
there's not a lot of bycatch.
And I guess in April, May, you do get some dolphins here.
When it's blowing this time of year, like, you know, when you're fishing out front white marlins and it's blowing, you see the birds and they usually got nice mahis. You can have some blackfin tunas bite, yeah. Wahoos. Not like a whole lot of, well, if you go deep dropping, but right. You know, it's not like you're going to be trolling and, you know, getting a different kind of bite. You can get chopped by kudas and kingfish. They love eating riggers. They jump 30 feet out of the water, yeah, with a rigger. There you go.
We got annihilated yesterday by that. Yeah. Terrible. Oy. Some days are worse than others. Some days are not bad at all. It's weird.
Sometimes they are not there. I don't know, you know.
Crazy.
I've seen pictures. I got my friend Rob from the university. He always sent me pictures of when the school of barracuda swimming. And say, that's sometimes what we go through, you know, like when you see the bag and, you know, you don't got nothing in the water, nothing. Like, they chop the squid chain, they eat your mackerel, they chop the squid chain in half, you know, you see all the litter, you know, just flopping around with the wind and all that.
Two of my danglers a couple days ago got chopped off, danglers on a squid chain in the front. I'm like, oh my God, it's so bad today.
Well, when I'm fishing out front here, I use something, I use some shads or something in the dredges.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the day, I just got to change at least three or four.
Yeah, know? Yeah, we use it.
Or those eels, those rubber eels.
Yeah. Yep.
They get chopped in half big pretty time. Easy. Yeah.
We've been using the dredge shads, mm-hmm, from Fishtown Sea. Mm-hmm. And they've been getting eaten up every day for sure.
They get
eaten
up.
We check them out, like, every hour or two, pull it out and replace one or two.
That makes sure it's swim right. Swimming right.
Yeah.
When they start fishing up front here, we were making, you know, dredge mullets, a mix.
Yeah.
Not like rigging 200 mullets.
Right, But you guys can't get bait here, though, right?
No,
You got to bring it, or...
We bring all the bait from
or
U.S.
Or grab it from a boat that's leaving, so...
That's what we usually do here.
It makes it difficult to pull all natural dredges.
Yeah,
You just don't have enough bait.
And, you know, I don't think it make a lot different here, really, to be honest.
All right.
You know, some people say they just like pulling natural... But here, I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference.
Right.
Here, you can be fishing, and you can go by school of kudas, and they chop you can put them in the water in 5 minutes.
36 mullets gone.
Yeah.
Triple dredge.
You can put them in the water, and then 5 minutes after, you think it's still right, and got chopped by kuda. Don't get me wrong. It works. I love it.
Yeah.
Like But I think here, you got a lot of shit that can fuck with the dredge that... With the mullets and all this stuff for the...
Wahoos, kingfish, barracudas, destroy, They love those things.
keep it rubber.
Yeah.
Keep it rubber.
Yeah.
At least if it breaks, you just replace it easy. You don't have to rig mullets.
You want to fish every day. You got enough bait to rig as it is.
Yeah. So talking about the bait situation, we bring the ballyhoos usually from Puerto Rico.
Okay.
My friend, my buddy from Caribbean Bait, Pierre, he got a really good bite over there. We bring it here in boats or... You know, when we take the boat to Puerto Rico to do some work, we bring the bait here.
Let's talk about that. When you need to do boat work, I know Casa de Campo has a place that you can haul
boat
out
yard.
And get work. Yeah,
we go to the boat yard in Casa de Campo. We've been there.
It's pretty good, right?
It's pretty good. Yeah.
But you said you need to speak Spanish.
Yeah, you got to speak Spanish to be over there. Yeah. Like I told you all the time, I had a friend that he went over there. He told the guys, like, hey, we're going to redo the non-skid on the bridge, and he went to Florida to pick something, and when he got back, they were, you know, sanding the bow deck.
Oh no.
Yeah. So So that was a misunderstood in there, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. Language barrier is tough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely not mm-hmm. easy.
And you got to be there all day long. That way they work on your boat. But yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I know the owner, the guy that run it for at least 8 years, 7 years. And he's great.
I've heard a lot of good things about a lot of people that have hauled out there. Yeah.
They got a huge travel leaf.
All right.
I think it's one of the biggest in the Caribbean, really. To be honest. Yeah.
They pull out yachts as well.
They pull out yachts. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. They can be holding you out, and next thing you know, right behind you, you got 150 feet. You know, he hauled out tugboats. So those heavy ass tugboats.
Wow. That's impressive.
It's big.
Yeah, it's a legit boat yard.
Yeah. You put this boat and look like nothing, you know, and they're like,
Well, but you go to Puerto Rico and you got to do serious stuff.
Yeah, we go to Puerto Rico once in a while. We went to Puerto Rico a few years ago, first time. We do a lot of headliners inside the boat. We replace carpet. Mm-hmm. What else? Name it. We put some other stuff in new electronic. We service all the fire system. The life raft. Then we went another time. We do all exhaust risers. A guy in Maya West.
He's awesome. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that. You're talking about that next time we.
Well, we found that guy.
That's something that takes a lot of time, usually.
Yeah. I think we talk about the marine exhaust, say, like 6-10 weeks or something, right?
Yeah, it took us 12 weeks before ours was done. Paul Mann.
Obviously.
We went and fished on a little boat in Grenada, and we left the Paul Mann in Florida, and then we went back and used that for the Bahamas season after the exhausts were done. But it sucks. Mm-hmm. The boat had to sit there for 3 months.
Yeah,
not turning on, just kind of not ideal.
No, the boat sitting there, no exhaust. You know, if the boat's sitting in the water, you don't want water coming through the boat and all this stuff.
Exactly.
So we hear about this guy, our friends from over there, from Doña Lucy. They built a 41 running. Mm-hmm. They got the hole, and they put everything together over there, and they found out about that guy. You know, they used the guy.
Uh-huh.
They knew him before, but they used that guy to build risers from... You know, from zero. They didn't have nothing.
That's cool.
And the guy built them, like, excellent. Like, great. So we went over there, and we had one already cracked. Pull that one out, give it to the guy, and 4 days later, the guy showed up with the riser right there in the boat. Like, beautiful, you know, beautiful welding, you know, material, all good. Like, you know, what do you expect to get?
Right, right.
I called Cap and say, hey, we got this one done. He said, really? Yeah, he was in Florida.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you want me to do? He said, hold on. Hey, give him another one. Okay. And then, you know, we just stay there. Yeah, we stay there 2 weeks, 3 weeks and a half, 2 weeks and a half. And we did all four, you know.
Uh-huh. So
it's awesome tool to have over there.
So within 100 miles or so, you kind of got everything you need to get whatever done.
Yeah.
So you really can home base here the way you guys do.
Yeah. Like... Usually going over, it's worth going over there once a year,
mm-hmm.
just to get stuff
that
you need. You know, you get.
Yeah, where do you get stuff here? I guess you can unless you bring it.
Man, yeah, it's really hard. You can bring stuff from Casa de Campo, but it's not like you can go today and they got a spray nine, but they don't got a boat soap.
So you
go in a week and they don't got spray nine, but they got plenty boat soap. Or they don't got this, but they got that, you know.
Gotcha.
Here you gotta keep a big stack of what you need.
Right.
Everything's stock. Like, you know, whenever I get a metal wax and insulator, I just get a handful of each. And I tell my mate, hey, when we're getting down to two, just let me know. You know, when you open the... When you know you got one bottle left, you know, just let me know and we order a couple more. Because it's not easy. And we get supplies when the boats leave. I just go over there and get whatever bait good they got or cleaning products.
Yeah,
all this
stuff.
They're
going back home. They don't need it. They'd rather sell it to you.
Or when a boat's coming from Florida or, you know, whatever, we just put a couple of Rubbermaid containers on the boat. With whatever we need.
Right.
You know, we bring some paint, we do some touch-ups in the boat, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. In 2022, we went over there to Puerto Rico, San Juan Bay Marina, and we drilled the hole for a sonar over there.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, we did that over there. We didn't do it here. Easier over there, you know, you got 3 flights a day from Lauderdale to San Juan.
Yeah, true.
We had the guy doing another sonar over there. Actually, that guy, he installed 3 sonars in 2 weeks over there in Puerto Rico.
No, no way.
That Boston Whaler that's here, the 42? Oh, yeah.
They have one?
They got one.
No way. Yeah,
they got rid of the toilet.
Put the hole there.
Put the sonar there.
Better use.
Yeah, and they were doing pits on the Delta Dawn on ours.
Okay.
All three at the same time.
Oh, that's awesome.
See, so that's that guy, what's his name? I don't know. Offshore Marine Electronic.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah.
Good guy, you know. He sent his ignition over there, and the guy, he knew what he was doing, all this stuff.
Right.
Shipping everything over there, it's way easier than here. Puerto Rico is a big help, really.
Well, so you obviously didn't start here. Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I'm from Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in Venezuela, in a city named Puerto Cruz. It's 160 miles east from La Guaira, famous okay. La Guaira. Caraballera and all that area.
Right.
How'd
you get into fishing?
My dad always had boats.
Okay.
And, you know, I grew up fishing. Where I live, that town, you got, like, there's, like, a lot of channels inside. And I've been living in front of the beach, in front of the water all my life. Like, my dad, we never had a marina.
Okay.
For the boat. The boat's always floating in front of your house.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Like, pretty
You're
cool.
always moored out front.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, right now, it's the first time we got a marina because we sold the Bertram we used to have.
Uh-huh.
And we got 31 Contender, so we just keep it out of water.
Okay.
But I tell my dad, right now you're paying marina for what you didn't pay, you know, fucking 30 years.
Yeah.
In your whole life. But, used to grow up fishing. Then my dad used to do trips to La Guaira, white marlin season most of the time for him. That's uh-huh. what they like doing. September, October. I started going them. I've been going there since I'm, you know, I can see it from the covering board. You know, I was like, whatever I would name it, 6, 7, 8, 10 years right. or something like that. And then I got hooked up. Here I am.
What
I catch up La Guaira late.
Okay. For like yeah. What was the year that you were? Started fishing there a fair amount.
I will say I started going over there like a lot, man. 2007. I already okay. was 17.
All right.
And then, you know, I'm born 1990, so I catch up late for La Guaira.
Were you working on boats there?
No, I was just not working.
How'd you get into working on boats?
You know, the people start offering. Like, yeah. we need an angler, we need this, we need that. We got to take a boat from here to there. And I'm a marine mechanic. I studied that in Orlando.
Okay.
Diesel division, so.
How old were you when you did that?
I graduated from over there when I was 21.
Okay. All right.
So then
you went straight into that.
Yeah, I lived in Venezuela after I went to school for a handful of years. And I was running man engines in Venezuela, the company, right. you know, mechanic, all this stuff. Fixing a lot of engines. I'd say, like, I catch up later for La Guaira. Late. That's when I met Jimmy Graham.
Right.
I'd say Bubba Carter. All the guys I know now from Aruba, all the Mansour family,
uh-huh.
all of them, they used to spend a lot of time down there, you know?
For sure.
But, you know, my buddy Ellie right now, the mate on the Betsy, I met him. He was working back then with everyone. He was working with George Swallen, the stalker, doing crazy things with fly fishing. like, you know, there's a lot of people still around
for down sure. there. That was an incredible fishery. Probably, I mean, still is. Talk to people back home, they still crushing them.
Yeah, they still catching a bunch.
Who's still fishing there?
Like, locals. I talked this morning with my buddy Louis. Louis, they're now everywhere in the world, Power Rangers.
Okay.
They got his dad, Tonio, he got 31 Bertram,
uh-huh.
Bahia Mar. And that boat seems more fish than, you name it, whatever. You know, more fish in the day.
You just don't hear about it anymore because nobody's reporting.
Nobody put reports on that. Yeah. You know, they fish commercial. They just go early in the morning, catch whatever they want to catch, and then come back, sell the fish, and they don't put reports. They don't want nobody seeing whatever they catch.
Yeah.
You know, they caffing everything, but that's the way, you know, they do it.
Yep.
I talked with him this morning with Louis, and he say blues are biting pretty thick. Tunas are like jumping out of the water, but there is no fuel.
Oh, no way.
They got commercial license in the boats, so they get cleared to get fuel, same amount of, you know, some days, not every day.
Right.
and he done been getting clear in 2 weeks already.
Wow.
So he don't got fuel. All the boats are sitting over there in the house.
That sucks.
He got 5 boats. Well, between him, his brother, his dad, uncles, all the family.
Man.
No fuel.
Is there any hope for the future there?
I hope so.
Has it gotten a little bit better? Or?
It's getting a little bit better, but
it's like, got, you know, so far to go.
Man, it's like the problem is the corruption. I didn't understand it. You know, it's hard to understand. Let me explain you this. In La Guaira, in Caraballera, if you want to get in the fuel dock, I think, if I'm not wrong, if your boat is up to 40 feet, you got to pay $350 to get in the fuel dock.
No way.
That's for the Navy guy, whatever you're going to call it, the Guardia.
All right.
The Guardian, you know?
Yeah, guard.
The guard. You got to pay him. Then you get your fuel, but if you got a big boat, say from 40 to 65, they just want to give you 1,000 liters every time you get in the dock, and you got to pay $500. So that's the trick how they make money.
Yeah, okay.
So they make you go, say you need, you know, you need 1,000 gallons, pretty close to 4,000 liters.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go 3 times to the fuel dock. So you got to pay, right there, you got to pay $1,500 to the guy.
Right.
Plus you got to pay the fuel.
Right.
You know, 50 is 50 cents a liter.
Yeah. Which
is, you know, it's not like, but
cheap, but
it's
still
not cheap. It's not like before that you used to 14 cents a gallon, you know?
I remember when we were there in 2010 as an American boat, the only way you could get it was by siphoning it from a local boat. But the guy that I was with, his old Captain Luis Suarez, I guess, got us in to get actual fuel. I think it was like 8 cents a gallon. I was like, this is insane. Mm-hmm. Like, we filled up for like, I think, $50 or something like that.
Yeah.
And they were like, here, just give him $100. And Luis is like, no, don't do that.
Never
like,
do it, yeah.
Give him the right amount. Like,
yeah. Like, I remember, man, it's like, when I went to school, the people was asking about, like, hey, how's the fuel over there? Like, you know, how cheap it is and all this stuff. I say, man, if I go with, back then, it used to be 100 bolivars bill.
Okay.
100 bolivars was the biggest one. If I go with 100 bolivars to the fuel dock, top my boat, 500 gallons, I will pay more for backup chips and a beer or a Coke, whatever I'm going to drink, than for the fuel. The guys were like, what? They say, yeah. You were paying like, you know, I would say 20 bolivars for the fuel, and then you're paying like 15 for a drink. Something like, it don't make
sense.
It never makes sense. It never
so
makes
crazy.
Sense. So it's not the right way to say it, but right now they are paying. All the Venezuelan people are paying for all the cheap or the free fuel they have for all the
time. Yeah.
And you say you're in your car and you stop in a light, and you got one of those new Land Cruisers next to you is $200,000.
Uh-huh.
You know, right there.
Yeah.
And then you see a car next to them that's probably like, you know, the Flintstones. They got to be pushing it. And that's the truth. That's what impacts the people. Like, you know, that's the actual
truth. There's zero middle class.
There's
poor.
I will say got to be like 5% of the country.
Yeah.
That's used to be that country used to be like really low in the real poor people, even the middle working class, like, they used to live good, you know. They used to make enough money, and they have money to drink, party, do whatever they want, you know.
Live a life.
Live a life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not living in a mansion, but living good, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
living good.
Sure.
Now, they gotta survive.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like. It's a shame.
They gotta survive, so. But it's a shame, because it's a great place.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to go back over there.
Yeah, I would love to go. I only got to fish for like a week.
I was looking at the picture the other day. It was 2011 with that Rick story.
Okay. Yeah, that was last one.
2011.
I was there the one before that.
Mm-hmm. You were there in 2010.
I was there 2010, and then they did it one more year after, which I wasn't there for.
Man, like last year they did that tournament in La Guaira, and they did a visa waiver and all that stuff. So
really?
Americans were allowed to go in. I hear a handful of Puerto Ricans went over there.
Okay.
But nobody was going to take a boat over there.
I was
going
to say, yeah, you can't take your boat there. And what are you going
to fish
love,
I would love to fish over there with a boat with sonar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, they got to be like, marking them everywhere, man.
Yeah, you'll really learn your sonar real quick there, especially in that fall fishery, these great Grand Slam fishing.
Yeah.
Tell the difference between a sail and a white and a blue marlin in a couple days.
That gotta be crazy. When you're on top of the bank, you know, you catch whatever you catch and then you go deep area.
Yeah.
You're chasing those blue ones around. Yeah. That gotta be awesome.
Well, what? All right, we'll go back. You went and did diesel mechanic school, and then you went back to Venezuela, and then you started hopping on some boats, and you ended up here, basically.
Mm-hmm. I ended up here, yeah.
What other places have you been to that you that you fished and worked?
I fish here in the Dominican Republic. Spent some time at Ian Fishing, San Martin, San Bart, BBIs, mm-hmm. on there working on a yacht.
Okay.
That was part of my, you know, after my school, all this stuff. I just work as a chief engineer in a yacht.
Okay.
100-footer.
How long did you do that for?
Pretty close to a year.
Okay.
If it wasn't a year, it was like pretty close.
All
right. Spent some time out and it was really good.
Uh-huh.
A lot of experience. Meeting a lot of people around. Then after that job, I found a guy from Florida that he just bought a boat in the boat show, in February boat show, that was like June. He bought a 48 Viking, the first new version of the 48 Vikings. And the guy wanna fish a little bit the Bahamas and then going over to the tournaments up north, North Carolina and all that stuff. We went over there, spent some time fishing Morehead City, got lucky, got a nice blue marlin on the big rock, got second place.
Tell us that story.
Well, we fish, we'll say we fish like 10 days total before the tournament. You know, one day here, one day over there, no complete week or nothing. We were getting some bites. I would say we caught probably 6 or 7 fishing 10 days. I think for over there it's pretty good.
Yeah.
One day we caught, our best day over there was 2. You know, first time I was pulling lures all day long. That's not what I usually do, you know. I grew up fishing with bait. So it was like kind of boring, just setting 4 lures in the water and just sitting in the mezzanine. You know,
all lures, no pitch.
We had a pitch bait in, but you know, everything was must lures.
Right, right, okay.
Pulling lures, bowling pins.
Right.
That big rock. We were leaving the first day. We had an engine problem. We were able to cancel the day. Before Lansing at 9 in the morning. We call in and she let us cancel the day. It's part of the regulations.
Right.
We fixed the engine problem. The people from Mancam fixed it or whatever it was. I don't remember exactly. We went in the afternoon, fish a little while, just try the boat. Call in, fish Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Fish Friday. Saturday, the weather was going to be like a little bit bumpy.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people went Friday. We're driving around, not seeing nothing. Nothing. You'll hear the wave paver, who can release marlins left and right. Wave paver. Well, and the guy was running the boat, the owner operator, said, well, what about if we go by the big rock? Well, we've been fishing here, you know, we'll call these 12, 13 days. We've never been by the big rock. Let's just go by. I was sitting in the bridge with him, next to him in the ladder, and nothing I know, he's turning around. So 2 big explosion on a... So the guys, don't worry about the one in the rigger. That's a little one. The one that ate the short rigger was a nice one. So
it's a pretty cool doubleheader.
A pretty cool doubleheader.
And both came tight on the lures.
Yeah, yeah. My bad. Was the opposite. The one that ate the rigger was a nice one. The one that ate the short rigger was a little one. Hooked that fish, got it, fight it for a little while, got it next to the boat. Man, really, the fish was short, but fat.
Uh-huh.
I told the guy, hey, I'm not like, you know, I'm not the best. I don't even kill 1,000 fish in my life, but I'm 100% sure the fish got more than 400 pounds.
Uh-huh.
Just put the measuring tape on it. Okay, we measure it, got the limit, put it in. It was like, you know, they say got to be 110. That fish was like 111 and a half.
Okay. That's like pretty, right on and
pretty, pretty tight, you know, pretty tight, but it looks like pretty thick.
Uh-huh.
From the time we bought that fish, so we got over inside in the marina and waited, man, that seems to me like it was like 3 days. Oh, my God.
Long ride home.
That happened like 11 in the morning. We got in the weigh station around 1 or something. I didn't eat nothing all day long. I was like, you know, nervous, whatever you want to call that. Yeah. Like butterfly flying around your belly all day long. I was like, man, like, you wanna if one if there is one place where you wanna be in, if you go to one of the tournaments at Weigh Station.
Oh yeah.
There's tons of people waiting for you over there. Like, you know, they're all excited. That little town, they just worry about the big rock. So we weighed the fish and all that. I was like about to crack a beer open, and the guy, a lady told me, "Are you the maid?" I said, "Yeah." "Turn around." I said, "What?" "He's the police. You gotta go to a polygraph." I said, "What?" The guy said, "You already been drinking?" I said, "No, man. This was gonna be about my first one." No. "We gotta go to the police station." "Okay." I asked him, "How long is it gonna take?" "No, that's quick." I said, "Well," start shaking, being a police car, all this stuff. Like, you know, "Ooh, there we go. Guy wearing a gun."
And English is not your first language.
English wasn't my first language. No, and I was, you know, man, every day here I learn more and more and more of English. You know, I've been talking, I got to talk English almost all day long.
Right, right.
Back then it was like a little bit more hard for me. I didn't, you know, throw it out like I'm doing it right now. So the guy told me, "Oh, make it simple, you know, don't worry about it." So, well, that's good. At least I'm sitting next to the guy. I'm not in the back in a police car. So we got over there, got that done, and blah, 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 blah. He asked me, like, same five questions, like, 20 times.
Oh, wow. All right.
So that's the way they set up the machine and blah, blah. It was a good experience being there. And then left over there, went to have dinner and all this stuff. Didn't sleep all night, waiting on people for next day. And then we were having lunch on a boat of Blue Marlin. I think it was a Viking.
And Viking, like, demo. Oh, I think. Now, here we
go. Said, "Oh, boy, here we go." It can be, you know, it can put you in, it can keep you in the second place, or can throw you down third or nothing, you know. You never know. If somebody else boated another one, you can be out. So they got in, and when we saw the fish, you know, it was like 450, if I'm not wrong. I'm not going to say a small one, but.
Yeah.
It's a nice, still a nice fish. No. So that was pretty cool.
That's a pretty cool experience. Always fun to go to scales.
Yeah.
Definitely fun.
Then after that, we went up the One Cheese. We stayed some time up there. I fish, you know, fishing the tunas with the kites.
Yeah.
That's super fun. Catching some billfish, a lot of midfish, you know, like a lot of tuna, wahoos, a lot of mahis.
Yeah, there. Good variety there. Really, really good. Especially after the big rock and right before it, too. Mm-hmm. But when you guys were fishing the kites, tell people how you guys did that there.
Man,
a lot of people talk about that, but
I just hear and see the people doing it. I never, before in my life,
right?
I never flew a kite. I don't know how to fly a kite.
Yeah.
Still, the guy was like, "Okay, just put the kite." I said, "Put the fucking bow in gear. I don't know how to fly this. I just throw it, hold it, and make it happen." You know, I put a couple in the water, but
never kite. Bound to happen.
I just kite fish one time in life. After that, way after that, but you know, it's cool. You know, using those rubber fly fish.
Yeah, the yummies or the. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of them now. So,
there's a bunch I remember we used to go to EJW, I think it's a tackle shop over there.
Shop.
We got a couple, and then I start seeing how they rig the hooks and all this stuff, pulling three of them in the kite, and you know, you're strolling sideways. And every time you got one, you start, you know, just jerking on it, make it fly.
Just like kind of like using. Pretty much like a green stick almost.
It's like using a green stick,
Make those things flash.
So, you know, if you see one just jump and miss it, you just wind it in and just let it go a little bit more.
The bites are cool on kites.
The bite's cool. Yeah, the bite's super cool.
When we chunk it home, we'll put a kite up.
The bite's super cool because you see the fish, it's close to you, but then when the fish is actually hooked, it's fucking three times the time. The distance. Because that line goes so high in the clip and then goes so down, like, what? You're still fighting it? Like, yeah, okay. But it was a real good experience. And then after that, Neil Orange used to be the mate on the Black Gold for years, too. And he went to run a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the opportunity to, you know, just jump in and Black Gold.
It worked out well.
Yeah, worked out pretty good. I got referred here, but, you know, I know Jimmy Graham for years.
Uh-huh.
Great guy.
Yeah, great guy.
You know, he was, we spent some time up there in One Cheese together.
Uh-huh.
And I, like, he told me, like, "Hey, Neil's gonna, you know, he's gonna go to another job and all that. I will call Keith and all." He helps. He's a good guy.
He knows a lot of people.
He knows a lot of people, yeah. So, we got here. Actually, after, I was going to fish St. Thomas. With my friends on the Doña Lucy.
Uh-huh.
right after when I got done fishing in Wanchese. So we flew over to St. Thomas, fished like, I would say, like for a week or something. That was the last Boy Scout they did, the tournament. Okay. And we were lucky to win it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What was how many releases?
Five.
And how many days?
3 days. 3 days. I think we got one the first day, none the third day, the second day, and four the fourth, the third day.
How were you guys fishing there? What was your
spread? Over like? There, we're pulling
St. Thomas.
Two ballyhoos in the riggers.
Okay.
Horse ballyhoos.
With chuggers.
Yeah, chuggers. Two cockpit teasers, two bridge teasers, and bowling pins.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was bowling pin and a dredge in the other side, a mix.
So basically one-on-one. Pitching everything.
Pitching everything, yeah.
Okay.
You got two pitches in the boat, you know, one in each side, and then we had another one in case it was a smaller fish.
Okay.
You didn't want to throw that big pitch, you know.
Gotcha. What were you throwing for a big pitch, 50 or 80?
60. It's a Tiagra 50 with 60-pound line.
Okay, gotcha.
So, you know, we just...
I have 80-pound.
Yeah, I use 82.
Well, for tuna fishing, these are 50s for tuna fishing.
Mine's in Venezuela is what I got.
Yeah.
I got 80 on
you
it.
You really... Get up on a drag and get them in. Don't mess around.
Yeah.
And charter fishing, it just lasts longer. You don't have to re-spool as much. Helps a lot.
Yeah. But
have a Moy Diamond 80 holds up good.
That's the way they fish over there. You know, we fish. It was awesome. And then got lucky, won that tournament. Went back to Puerto Rico for a little while, and then got the call from Keith.
Mm-hmm.
Say, you want a ticket? Well, let's try it. See how it works.
Absolutely.
And he said, well, let's see how it works, and we go fishing. I'll be there next week. First day, luckily, thanks God, we got 12 or 14 blue martins first day.
No
so
way.
We're on the boat.
Yeah. Good start. Great way to start your employment.
Great start. Back then, Sarge used to fish like 3 or 4 days, no more than that. Now we fish longer trips. And we fish, I think, I'm pretty sure we got 12, 6, and 7, okay. If I'm not wrong. First 3 days. Working
that's
on the
boat. Awesome.
That was like awesome.
This is all pre-Ami too. Like,
So that's pretty.
Still,
that's
how good the fishing is.
Uh huh.
Well, out of all the places you fish, where's your absolute favorite?
Man, if you put me to choose, I will choose home for sure.
Yeah.
No Puerto Cruz, where I grew up, if you find a place where there is a hole in the ocean, it's right there. There's no bottom. Like it's super deep.
Okay.
If you look the charts, that the Fossa de Cariaco is like, man, it's like, it goes.
It's a hole.
It's a hole. Yeah. You know, we were lucky. We've seen a handful of blue martins a year down there. You know?
Right.
But a lot of sailfish.
Uh-huh.
When they stop those commercial fishermen's nets, inshore, you know, the ones that are, you know, called the Rastorbeck, the ones that got the big net.
Persane?
The ones that they destroy the whole bottom, all this.
Kind of like a dragger.
Is it like a dragger? Yeah.
Net, but they drag it in the bottom.
They drag it in the bottom. They you know, they stop that. I would say, man, probably 2004, 2003, 2004, something like that. And they were illegal to do it.
Uh-huh.
Fishing started getting way better. Like, way better. You can be going out there and, you know, seeing a handful of sailfish a day over there, all big ones. And then by September, October, you can see a couple blue marlins.
Okay.
It was like fun fishing over there. And we got an island. It's like 50 miles from my house, named Tortuga Island. Fishery over there, it's awesome. That's where we go and catch those big tunas.
Yeah, okay.
Blue marlin.
Big sickle fin, beautiful Allison tuna. Yeah.
Like the same fish that run through La Guaira, I run through there.
Uh-huh.
If you fish the north of that island, so we'd be like the same line than La Guaira.
Uh-huh.
When the fish are thick in La Guaira, you know, you can... I talk with my friends over there. I don't go over there that much now. It's good, man. You know, you talk with them. Okay, the fish are in like 12 line or something. And when you go over there, if you don't find them in the 12, they got to be in the probably 14, 16, but they're pretty close. They give you an idea. Mm-hmm. Really big area to explore by one boat. I used to put a lot of time over there when we had the Bertram, 38 Bertram for my family.
Uh-huh.
And we used to put a lot of days on it. I was able to fish with that boat 3 days over there.
All right.
So now with this contender, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
No place to stay in the boat, you know.
Yep.
No place to keep the fish. That's, you know, that's what I worry more about it. You know, one time we went to La Tortuga, and I usually told my, back then, you know, we didn't have no cell phone, sat phone or nothing. I called, told mom, and mama, we'll be back, you know, I was going with my dad, two friends, we'll be back, I was leaving Friday, we'll be back Sunday, and then I called her midnight Friday. What the fuck? Something happened? No, we just got a lot of fish, and there's no place where we can keep it, so we're coming back. Or the weather is terrible, we're coming back, so, you know.
Right.
One time, when we find the best fishery over there, the best fishing, as soon as pulling in the channel, one engine shut down, low fuel. So I run it like, we run it all the way to the limit. I would say over there, here, I love it here.
Yeah.
I really like a lot of St. Thomas. Big fish. St. Thomas is a great place.
If you were somebody coming on a vacation to Punta Cana or Cap Cana and you wanted to get out fishing, who would you say the best three local charter boats recommend?
Get Isla Marine with Ito, my buddy Ito, or Edgar on the Tease Me.
Okay.
They're the best ones.
Perfect.
So for those of you out there who are traveling and looking for charters, a great way to find a charter is on fishingbooker.com. They are the largest offer of local vetted licensed guides across the U.S. and also worldwide. So anywhere you're going, if you need to look up a great charter, the best way to do it, from what I found, is using Fishing Booker. It's just a fast and easy way to compare a whole bunch of charter boats that are in the area that you're going and see what their availability is. Something cool they do have is a Meet the Captain video. So you can actually see who you're going to be fishing with. And yeah, you can't always tell through a video everything, but it does at least give you the idea of who the captain is, what their demeanor is like. And on top of that, also there's plenty of reviews on any charter boat that's been on there for a while. People do leave reviews on here. So you can see verified reviews and see the charter and tour descriptions. And it's not only for offshore fishing, it's everything. You have inshore guides, offshore guides. And if you are traveling anywhere in the U.S. or even internationally and don't have very good insight on who to fish with, this would be the best place that I recommend that you go. So if you are going on a trip, whether it's with family abroad and you just want to get a day of fishing in, or if you're going on a fishing trip with your friends or just yourself, go to fishingbooker.com to book your trip. And it's, like I said, it's a great, easy way to find who is available there and compare across all the charter options and guides available for that area.
Well, what do you guys got coming up for the next couple months here? Just gearing up for white marlin season?
Yes, sir. We're ready for white marlin season already.
You guys had a great day the other day. One day we weren't out in the water. You guys crushed it, caught 10.
Yeah, we set that day we came back from Casa de Campo. We set out. We caught 3 that afternoon. And then next morning, we caught white as soon as we set out. Then we got a pair of mahis and then a pair of wahoos.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was
early. Like, oh, man, fish are chewing.
Like at 11:30, we caught another white. I said, well, you know, probably that's going to be it, you know?
Yeah.
It was like real slow. And then at 1:30, we caught double whites. Then we set everything back out, caught a single. Then set everything back out, caught a single. Got another single. Then pulled one off and then caught another double. And we usually fish till 5.
Okay.
5 is like, you know,
that's early, the cutoff time.
Yeah. We leave early, but we usually fish till 5. And we were coming down, and I usually, you know, I just always leave a bait in the water till, you know, it's time to just run in.
Yeah.
And I left one bait in the water, and I was, you know, bringing down my squid chain, you know, putting the rubber band and shit. Flatline went out, so I just let it go. Watch it from the rod hole. I just let it go, put some drag on it. And keep pulling and say, man, I got a white one here. And she got all over the place. So, well, good. It happened also a couple times here.
When it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
Man, yeah, it happened to us a couple times. Like, you know, that last rod always get a bite.
Yeah.
Sometimes we pull a lure in the rigger, Sea Star. Uh-huh. And one time I remember, man, I wind it in the Sea Star and it was like the double line in the reel. And I turn around and, oh, fuck it, what's going? I don't use clicker, but I turn around, I hear the line like, I turn around, the rod was bent to the side, fish was jumping under the rigger. So holy fuck, we got something out of there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's real fun. But
and weird though, next day one bite.
Next day we have one bite. That's it.
But 11 bites to one bite. So strange.
Yeah,
I guess that's just March.
But man, You just gotta go.
Yep.
You gotta go fishing. We're not
gonna
catch him here for sure.
Nope, not here, dog. Yeah, well, thanks a lot for your time. How can people reach out to you?
Michael? Instagram or whatever. Yep. I don't know. Instagram, Facebook.
I'll put all that in the show notes so you guys ever want to reach out to Jose, you can. But thanks a lot for your time. This is awesome, and your insight about the Dominican Republic and other fisheries is awesome.
And people come in here, like a lot of people just come here and they just call asking about, you know, information. Like, you know, we talk about some of that before you came here.
We have kept in touch with you. I've always followed you over the years because you guys are always fishing and doing well. And when I knew I was going to come here for the season, I reached out to you. You've been really helpful. So,
like, you know, I help people that, which is sleep, just getting cars, getting condos, you know. Yep. I just put them with the right people.
For sure.
Because if I go somewhere one time and I will need some help, I would like to get it, you know?
Absolutely. No, definitely come back around.
Yeah.
You're really helpful for me. I really appreciate
whatever
it.
Whatever you guys need, we live here. We know all the facilities. Like I said, we know freight companies. We know rental car people here. We know realtor for condos, you know.
Everything you need.
Yeah, we know people in the marina. We know the Panga guys. We know these, that.
Yep.
So.
Cool, man. Well, let's look forward to the upcoming Whit Marlin season and get on it.
Yes, sir.
Cool, man. Thanks a lot.
Don't worry, man.
Well, thank you so much for listening to episode 38 of the Salty Euphoria podcast. We are going to jump into the final part of the podcast, which is our Top Yacht segment. And I am a yacht broker with United Yacht Sales. If you'd like to buy or sell your boat, please reach out to me. I have my information in the show notes. Just email me, rickywheeler@unitedyacht.com. So the first boat I want to jump into here is the custom category, which is my top custom boat pick. And it is a 2005 66-foot custom Carolina. Right now, it is listed for $1.25 million. I just think that this boat is a lot of boat for the money. $1.25 million custom Carolina boat. It's 66 foot. You know, like I said, it's got a lot of room. The boat has low hours. It has Caterpillar C32s, which put out 1,650 horsepower each. And it has under 1,000 hours at original hours. It's advertised as cruising at 32 knots, the top speed at 37 knots, and definitely has the fuel capacity at 1,600 plus gallons of diesel. It's definitely a boat that seems like it'd be a great travel boat. It's two generators, three staterooms, two crew cabins, and a forehead layout. It's just a really cool boat inside and out. And it is Donald Blunt design, which is something that caught my eye because my boat was Donald Blunt design. And I absolutely love my boat. I love the way it rides. And I know no two boats are exactly the same, but it seems any boat I've ever been on that was designed by Donald Blunt Associates has been a great riding boat in my experience. So that's why I picked this one. Like I said, a lot of boat for the money. $1.25 million, 66 feet. Looks very pretty and has every feature you could need. Next pick here is going to be my production boat pick. And I went with a 64-foot Viking. It's a 2007, and it's a new one. Just came to market. It's listed for just under $1.6 million. I just really like the 64 Viking. I've fished on three of them. It's just a great all-around boat. Really comfortable boat to travel on, very comfortable boat to fish on anywhere in the world. Lots of cockpit space, but still manageable with as just one mate. You can still get around quickly to everything. The mezzanine setup's always great. The Viking finish inside now is very, very nice. And with Caterpillar 32As, this boat will definitely cruise at a very, very good speed. These engines have just under 3,500 hours on them, and they have 3,500 hours on them since the major overhaul. So, like I said, compared to other 64s that are out there, I just like this one. Like I said, new to market. It's a 64 Viking that is just a great fishing and travel platform for somebody looking to really get into their first big boat and with crew and travel. Next up, we have sport fishing boats for under $300,000. And I went with an express boat on this one. It is a 2003 Custom Carolina Guthrie 40-footer, and it is listed for $249,000. It's just a really pretty boat that just looks like it'd be awesome owner-operator style boat. It's got a pretty teak deck, teak throughout the helm area, and teak covering boards. Has kind of a makeshift little mezz seat setup. I mean, it's just a great fishing boat that wouldn't be too much for somebody to personally handle and maintain. I also like this boat because I think it's powered perfectly with Cummins QSM11s that give you really good economy, 28 knot cruise of 45 gallons per hour. Like I said, I just think this would be a really great boat for an owner operator because I know there's a lot of people out there that really like express boats and wood boat. Hull is going to ride quiet and nice. While these engines do have a lot of hours on them, doing a rebuild isn't super expensive on engines like these, and they are engines that you would want to keep. You know, between that and having a ZF325A gears, just think this is a really good power plant. With a little love and a little work, this boat could be something pretty amazing for an owner-operator. Last but not least, we get into our Sport Fishing Center consoles. I'm a big fan of CVs. I fish on a lot of them. They're just well thought out. Everything's built really solid, and they're just really fishable boat. So I picked this 34-foot CV. It's a 2003, older boat. It's a 340B, but it's only listed for $149,000. Very, very inexpensive for the 34-foot CV. Probably one of the cheapest on the market. Yes, it does have some hours on its 2013 Mercury Verado 300s at 1,050 hours, but if these things are well-maintained, Mercury Verado 300s can go well in excess of 2,500 hours. So you still have plenty of life there, a great boat, great engine. It's just really hard to find a boat of this caliber in this price range, and that's why I put it in there. Like I said, I love fishing the CVs. I really am partial to the 34-footer. I think it's perfect size. You can still trailer it, really easy to maintain, and that's why I picked the 34-foot CV for $149,000. Well, that's it for Top Yachts, and I hope you really like this episode. It was a fun one to do with Jose on the boat, and I can't wait to talk to you in the next episode.
This was another episode of the Saltwater Euphoria Podcast. If you want to find out more about all the things that were mentioned on this episode, visit saltwatereuphoria.com/podcast. Hit like and subscribe for more big game sport fishing, conversations with other sport fishing enthusiasts, and personal stories from the life of Captain Ricky Wheeler. This is Saltwater Euphoria Podcast. Till next time.